you have to remember, or somewhere in the back of your mind there, that when you were in the military and that order came by to, or came down to use that particular frequency, your stuff was encrypted. There's what. So, there again, you know, it's a whole different world out there in the military, and everybody knows it if they've been in the military. But a lot of things that, you know, Andy brought up trunking, and I brought up spread spectrum, and some other things like that. A lot of that is terminology or phraseology, you know. We got different words for it, but it means the same thing. You know, once you figure out what we're really talking about, then you, oh, I know what that is, and you do, which is a good thing. But young man, you're doing well, and like I said, you're a good operator, and I'm proud of you. You do a good job. I've got to jump out of here and go in here and check on Miss my sweet little bride, Joey. See how she's doing, and visit with her for a little bit. I've been away from the house just a good bit today. Went down to the AK's house, Silent Key, and made a list of a lot of his equipment, and his bride is thinking about having a like a mini ham fest at her place. I don't know when that's going to be just yet, but he's got all kinds of stuff that she would like to sell and get out from the house, and I'm going to try to help her with that. But good hearing you in here. Andy, if you're back, good hearing you. Larry, good hearing you. And Dave, if you're still listening, good hearing you. And good hearing old Billy down there in Anderson. But all y'all have a great evening, and we'll say 73 to the group. KI4DOS.
KI4DOS, KO4NU, 73s to you, and I hope to see you soon, and thank you so much for listening and passing on the information. Have a good night, Gary, and tell Miss Joy, me and Anna said hello. So I'm clear with you, but monitoring.
Tuesday, there, Chad, and you remember what those two boxes that I was asking you about? You want me to bring them?
That'd be great, and I'll see if I can help you out with it.
No problem. And I'll come over and visit with you a little bit on Tuesday, and y'all have a good evening. KI4DOS clear.
JBQ. For you, I see what time it is. Would you want to sign with everybody, or you still have a little talk left in you?
Larry, you can't go to bed till at least midnight now. I mean, hang with me just a little bit more.
Check, and everybody has, you know, a different day every day. I know I do. Some nights I don't sleep well, and other nights I sleep too well to make up for it. Oh, I guess. Anyway. The people have been, well, at least within my hearing, they have let it be known that they miss some of the people we've been talking to tonight, yes, that they miss the nest that we used to have here. And it went sort of similar to what you have started here, what you and Walt have started here. And I kind of miss it too. I mean, for years, I have not said much more than what it took to check in. I'm glad that we're doing this. I think it's a good thing. And we do have our boundaries, but this is what life is about. You know, we should understand, and it's a part of what wisdom is, we should understand what our boundaries are. And they're different widths, different people, and different ways of living, I suppose. And I used to say when I first got in this hobby that I like to listen, I like to keep my head down, like a turkey should, you know? And I'm in it just that way, because I was afraid, as the more that I opened up to, you know, what I was thinking, what I was doing, and all that stuff, that I could just get shot, you know? And nobody wants to live like that. You should feel free to speak with your friends within the boundaries that are appropriate. And I learned what that means. You know, until you know what that means, you are in the dark, of course. And you have all kinds of thoughts about it. This hobby and these people in this family we call hams. They're not difficult to understand, they're not difficult to get to know, and they can be the best friends you've ever had. KK4JBQ.
Correct. And I feel like I've done a pretty good job. I've messed up a couple of times, but usually caught myself, and I'm pretty good at detecting that. If another operator kind of moves the conversation to something to the far left or far right, then I'm thinking, okay, what'd I say? And then it usually dawns on me a couple of seconds after that. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have been discussing that, but my point is, I have learned and continue to learn. So, not to change topic or anything, but did you get my lizard, the photo of the lizard?
Oh, as a matter of fact, something to know about me, I suppose. While I understand computers, I have a degree in computer science. I'm shy of email. And I never have done social media, as they call it, using a computer to express myself to the world and send pictures of what I had for lunch. I'll take a picture of what I had for lunch. I sat down at the firehouse once, and I ate 14 pickles. I like pickles. They have good pickles. So I mentioned this to the server. I really like your pickles. And they put more pickles in there than there was sandwich. And so I took a picture of it. But I did not share that with the world. That was my own. Well, Donna was with me, but that was our own little thing, you know. And I have no urgency to share with the world like a lot of people have learned to do. And anyway... But email has completely engulfed me to the point that I have 6 email addresses. I decided once upon a time that it was best if I had an email address for each category of email that I might want to receive. Oh, for instance, I've got an email address that's primarily for ham radio stuff, and some that's primarily for computer stuff. And I'm an artist in watercolor. And I have an email address that, you know, so that I can go to these email addresses, and that's what I'd be reading about, you know. What it amounted to, though, what it turned out to be, is that I could avoid looking at that if I were busy with something else. And it starts piling up in there to the tune of thousands of emails I've never seen. I just developed a bad habit, and I'll have to... either make a new email address that I only give out for special people, or I have to do due diligence and clean up these email addresses that have really gotten overloaded. KK4JBQ.
KK4JBQ. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I certainly I get it. I do. But I just wanted to let you know that, you know, the lizard man or the lizard story was indeed a true story, and just wanted to make sure you saw how evil looking that thing was. I mean, it was just, man, and that was a small one. So, if you got just a minute, I was thinking today was kind of looking forward to tonight, because me and Anna have been recovering from the engagement party with my son, and we had just been wiped out today because we've been remodeling and tried to get all that cleaned up before the party, and I had to take all my tools back down to the shop so we could have, you know, a tool-free party. And now I've got one more bathroom to do. Now I got to bring all of them back up here. So my point is that if you are ever, you know, get a point where you check your email, I just wanted you to see the lizard and just kind of how evil that thing looked. So I've got another little funny story if you're interested.
Sure, I'm interested, and I'm looking at the lizard now, and I like your overalls. I wish I had a new pair like that. But my dad wore overalls like that all the time, and all of his brothers wore overalls, and his father wore overalls, unless he was dressed up to go to church. He was a minister after all. So that looks like home to me. But this guy looks like an iguana or an overgrown gecko or something. I mean, I particularly think he looks a little more like an alligator with the tail, the ridges on his tail. I wouldn't be picking him up. Are those Kevlar gloves that you're wearing?
Actually, asbestos gloves made for a machine gun barrel, so you can take the machine gun barrel off when it's red hot without burning your hands. That's all we had. Well, we had individual gloves, but I didn't really know what I was dealing with. All I saw was the tongue. I mean, we watched the tongue for a couple of days until the hole got big enough to where I could pretty much see the top of his head and see kind of how big this thing was. Then that's when we made the decision that, hey, Sarge, he's got to go, and you're going to have to do something about that, because, you know, we had a couple of instances where a couple of soldiers got sent home because of infections, because of some of the insects that live in that environment. One of them, which was a menace, an absolute menace, was the camel spiders. And they're not actually a spider. They don't have eight legs. They have six legs. They actually belong to the crustacean family. But they are the scariest things you've seen. And I'm arachnophobic. I hate spiders. These things are huge. I think the biggest one that we killed was... and, I mean, some of them, you would shoot them. They'd be at a distance, of course. But you got to understand that when they start getting in bedding at night when you sleep, and we had a couple of soldiers that were bitten. Now, what I was told by our medic station, I'm not sure this is true or not, but one of the doctors, we had a camel spider get in a sleeping bag with a soldier. And the way the camel spider works is that, or the way the doctor explained was that the toxin that the camel spider injects into your flesh has a antiseptic that comes first. Not an antiseptic, but a numbing agent. I forget what that's called, but he will pierce the skin and numb the skin, and then comes the venom, and it's local anesthetic instead of antiseptic, anesthetic. So you'll numb the skin, and then the venom goes in and kind of digests the material, muscle fat, whatever it is, and he'll just feed and then leave. Well, that creates, it's not so much the bite that infects you, it is you're nasty, you're filthy, and when he bites, it carries that bacteria under the skin, and that's kind of what gets you, you know, in trouble. But during the day, the sand is so hot that they will chase you for your shade. In other words, when you're walking to the chow hall or to wherever you're walking, they can run really fast. I don't know how fast, but they can keep up with a human and walking stride easily. But the perception is that they're chasing you. But the reality of it is that they are chasing you, but they're chasing you to stay in your shade. And that can be a scary looking thing. But like I said, when they start getting into bedding at night, that becomes a big issue. And we just kind of took that serious because we had two of them had to go home because of a massive infection because of that kind of bite.
Well, I guess I grew up in the woods, and deserts are something I'm not familiar with, but woods are something a lot of people are not familiar with. You have to know the environment that you're in and know that there's a lot of things on earth that'll kill you. And maybe they don't even mean to. They're just living their life. Maybe they interpret something you did as a threat. And that's just something you don't do, you know. So I learned to be cautious and gather all the wisdom I could about the environment that I was in. And I'd be listening, if I were in that environment with you, and you had been there for a while, I'd be listening to everything you said, and remembering every detail as best I could, because I just think that's what people ought to do. I had a friend, I've lived all over the United States anyway, I've lived abroad, but I had a friend in Michigan once, who says he just loves concrete. If he were in the woods, he would miss the signpost to let him know where he was. He wouldn't know what direction it was if it wasn't written on the sign, you know, the street sign. And I thought that really so odd, but that's what was my perspective, you see. He didn't know the things that I knew, and I couldn't really appreciate what he was saying. But we became good friends, and I knew him to be just very different than anybody that I'd ever known. He was a great baseball fan, I mean, to the point that he could tell you the scores, the stats, as it is, for every player on every team, what their minor league team was. It was just full of numbers. I was impressed. I didn't know that much about anything. But I learned that it came at a cost. He didn't have enough room in his head to store up some things that were common knowledge to most other people that I knew. And so we got along because I appreciated how he was different. He appreciated how I was different. And that's how people form friendships. That and respect. Friendships is something my wife can't really understand this, and I hate to phrase it like that, but she's a friend to everybody the first time she meets me. And you know what? You know what I'm about to say, so I won't say it. KK4JBQ.
So when we move in, when we did our deployments, there was usually, with the exception of the first deployment, there was a unit there that had done their time, and we would devote 2 weeks to that transition, and that's called left seat, right seat. So when the new unit gets on the ground, they make contact with the unit that has been there and done their time. And for the first week, the unit that has been there shows you the ropes. They tell you the ins and outs. They tell you what to do, what to watch for, what not to do, where to go, where not to go, every little detail. And everybody listens because, obviously, because of the type of environment in, you better listen. And then the second week, we run the show while they overwatch and make sure that we are doing, you know, what they said to do. And so listening, you mentioned listening to somebody, that you would listen to what they had to say. Well, we do. That's called left seat, right seat, or we did. Left seat, right seat. But, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. But, so here's a little blurb for you since we're on insects. So the first deployment, let me let this repeater drop. That me and a squad leader decided one day we needed a break, and we need to just get off of the fob and just go and just get away from all of the stress. So we drove outside of the fob. We probably went maybe a mile out in the middle of the desert. It wasn't far. Went by the chow hall, got us a thermos of coffee, and we were going to ride out there in the early morning before it got too hot and just try to have 10 or 15 minutes to ourselves. So, hadn't been there long, and I'm driving, and we get out about a mile out, and he says, stop the vehicle, stop the vehicle. So, I'm, you know, on the defensive, and he gets out of the vehicle, and he's just looking out across the desert. And I said, what is it? What's the matter? What's the matter? And he says, I want you to think about this for a minute. How in the world you stay in a place like this and move for 40 years through the desert? And he was getting biblical on me here. But now you just think about it for a minute. No trees for shade. No trees, no buildings. It is a relentless sand, relentless heat, relentless sandstorms, or not relentless sandstorms, but a lot of sandstorms. And just when you are able to see that and put that into perspective, you know, I mean, these people wandered for 40 years in this type of place. And, man, you just, so getting back to the story, he said that, and I thought about that for a little while, a couple of days. And as the weeks and days started to roll by, that the sand flea population started to increase. That's so bad to the point to where the medical command would issue us I'm just going to say this now. It's kind of funny, but it is what it is. So they issued, you go to the TMC, and the platoon sergeants would go to the medical command or first aid station. And where we were, we had a full hospital there. And they would issue you knee-high pantyhose that, you know, women wore. And you would put those knee-high pantyhose on, and then your socks, and then your boots. And that would deter the sand fleas from crawling up your boots and into your, where you had your boot bloused, because they're like, kind of like a chigger. They get in contact points around your waist and around your neckline and your boot blousing and all that, and just absolutely just eat you alive. So notice that the sand flea population just went out the roof, and it was unbearable for a couple of weeks. After a couple of weeks, we started to notice that the sand flea population started to drop, but the cricket population started to rise. So, and the crickets were, they would get in your sleeping bag and in your food. I mean, just everywhere, crickets. And they're harmless. And I just remember it being kind of funny, because we were laughing and joking and no longer complaining, because crickets were in your sleeping bag and your food, because they didn't bite you. They just hop and jump everywhere, and you just flick them off of your plate or out of your drink or off of your uniform or whatever. But they weren't biting. That was the big deal. Then, after about a month or so of the crickets, and keep in mind the great plagues, the cricket population started to drop, and out of when the crickets started to drop, then you had the, we had three occasions where pit vipers showed up, very small now, 6 or 8 inches long, snakes that showed up in the sleeping quarters, and camel spiders. That population started to grow. Here comes the yellow lizards. So the yellow lizards, so basically what we deduced that was happening was the sand fleas came and the crickets started to eat the sand fleas. Then their population got out of control. Then the vipers and the camel spiders started eating the crickets. Then their population started to die. And then the lizards came out. So, in that picture that you're seeing is at the end of what we called the five plagues. And we ended up, and luckily, by that time, we were at the end of our deployment, and we were so glad because we didn't know what plague was coming next. We had made it through the fleas, the crickets, the spiders, the snakes, and we were at the lizards. And some of those lizards were very big, I'd like to say. But That was our five plagues, and we got to come home at the end of that. So, just kind of wanted to share that with you.
Thought I'd leave a little space there just in case anybody wanted to join us. KK4JBQ. That's not unlike one of my studies in college was biology, and it's not unlike. Everything, this is a little philosophical, I apologize for that, but everything in life depends on death. We live on the lives of other creatures. We employ other creatures to do manual labor. We use other creatures. And we have pets for the reason that people want pets. But the natural world is ordered differently. And as soon as you understand that, you understand a great deal about how you fit in. That's all I've got to say about that. That is a different environment than I've ever known. But I think I could fit in. Just give me a week. KK4JVQ.
Needless to say, it was a very interesting experience throughout the whole time. And there's a lot of funny stuff that came out of it. And that's the stuff I like to focus on and things like that. But so, Larry, I went in there and got the one of my journals, and you asked me the other night what dates. So, the first deployment, the first entry in my journal was the day is the 4th of February, 2000. Looks like 2 or 3. I have started keeping this journal to inform my family, my boys, a written history of their father during this period of his life. So that was the next entry, 5 February 2002. So, and then the one after that is 2003. So I'm assuming it was February 2003.
I'm here. I'm listening to every word, kind of leaning on, you know.
5 February 2002, which is kind of a short one. It's 11:18, and all is busy at the armory. We are busy packing and awaiting our mobilization order for the last hour and a half. We have listened to Colin Powell address the nation and the UN on Iraq and Saddam Hussein. I have listened to him talk about nerve agents, blister agents, biological weapons, and nuclear weapons. We have been briefed with satellite pictures, interpreted phone conversations. It's all very disturbing, especially thinking about my boys. I am sorry that you must grow up with things, with words like VX, nerve agent, mustard, blister, and blood agents. I grew up with words such as Cold War and cotton. I am deeply moved and sorrowed that you and your generation will experience such things as this. That's the end of the first entry.
K4JBQ. Well, something that would have just come out at some point. Don and I were not able to have children, and don't want to go into all that, no need. But what I have learned being just a man and not a father is that that's a whole different mindset. It calls you to be a special person, and I revel in that. I take what I know a father to be, for good or bad, the way my father treated us kids. But then I've also known other men who were fathers. And I've come to know that my dad was a particularly, he had a certain bent, you know. And the more I knew about the way he grew up as a son of a Baptist minister, the more I understood about him. What you tell me about being a father will tell me a great deal about you. It speaks to your character, because that's where character really shines. It takes front and center. And I appreciate your sharing that with me. KK4JBQ.
LZI back.
Glad you're back. So we're just, I don't exactly know how we got on this. We've been talking about this for a couple of nights, I guess. But Larry asked me last week or so the dates I deployed, and I kept a journal of both deployments, and I was just reading in the dates. So, the second journal, Larry, is labeled Road to War, Volume 2, 24 May 2010. First sentence in the first entry is, well, here we go again. This is the second time around, and I have to say, I'm not sure I'm dealing with this a whole lot better than I did the first one. So, that's kind of funny, I guess. But I don't know, man. Maybe I shouldn't be reading this. I mean, maybe it's not something you're interested in hearing. But he did ask what the dates were, and I said, let me go grab them so I can give him the dates. But at any rate, I don't know. Some of this is really funny.
KK4JBQ. Another thing that I don't know how it happened, but I like to read. My eyesight is failing me currently, but I do like to read. And my favorite reading is autobiographies. What people write about their own lives. And, that's just a genre. It can be many different, it can take place in many different ways. Yours is more a chronicle. And I certainly respect why you chose to put it down. It's something that you're recalling. And as you read those words, you know them to be a certain, that they recall things to you. They stand for me as just the way it was for you. You can embellish it, you can tell me things that you didn't write, and I'll know more detail, but I'll never know it the way you knew it. This is just what you have to accept. But that you would leave this for your children to understand the man you were at that time, it speaks a lot about you as a person. I got to say that. Anyway, thank you. And anything else you'd like to share there is fine with me.
So, I mean, this can end up being endless, I guess, but this is going to let you know. So, the first entry on the second deployment, 24 March 2010. So, that's at home station. We made it to Tallil Air Force Base on 3 June. So, there's a little bit about arriving that night when we got there. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. We bedded down. So, that's 3 June. 4 June, the next day. So, we've been in country 8, maybe 9 hours. So, today is 4 June 2010. Last night was horrible. We got hit by 3 rockets yesterday. One rocket went through a T-wall, about 12 inches thick of concrete. I never in my life seen so much damage, and I thought we were sort of protected by all of the T-walls and Jersey barriers here. Evidently now I can see that I'm not sure that it all stopped a lot of the power of the rocket. I took a piece of the rocket for a keepsake and have it included in the journal. I guess that is 3 less rockets that I'll have to go through again, all for now. So there's a little piece of shrapnel inside the journal. It's the tape has come loose, but it's all in the back here. So that was day one, and I just 11 more months to go. Just man, mercy. But I'll pick out some of the funny stuff in here, and we'll read those if you're interested. And man, please, if this is boring you to death, hey, we can talk about something else. But just letting you know.
Bells the guy. As we said earlier about the political part, we want to stay away from that. But I'm just curious about one thing about it, though. Was you in Afghanistan or Iraq?
In Iraq. For the first deployment was actually more Kuwait, right at the border of Iraq and Kuwait. But the second deployment was just in the middle of the country, pretty much. You can look and see where Talil Air Force Base is. And I traveled all through the country for the whole 12 months. So, I hope that answers your question. Now, there was one 27-day deployment to Egypt. I was in Egypt when the Twin Towers fell in a place called Alexandria. And that was not a fun 20-something days. But it was a very interesting short TDY instead of a deployment. It was under 30 days, so they didn't have to pay you, you know, hazardous duty pay. It was a 27-day deployment. But that was very scary when the towers fell, and not a place I enjoyed being at all.
J.I.4LZI, there's somebody that's part of the Red Cross pretty much now that lives up here above me. K3ZX, John Ligon. He was in back in, when was that? 91, 90? Over in Iraq back at that time, and he was in it back then, and he was part of our radio group for a little while, and as you said, he's mentioned us in past years, he's seen any and everything, and while we're at it, too, he's talking about other things, too, that, you said that he was your cousin, I can't remember. The one that's almost blind that bought the 7300 and wants to know about UHF and VHF. How's he doing right now, here as far as amateur radio goes?
Doing very well. He's actually, I have two cousins that's over in that direction, Andy. One is, his call sign is KO4. QLG, and that's my cousin Chris. And then my other cousin, the one that is legally blind, he is just got his amateur extra license, and his call is KOY. I'm sorry, Andy, I can't recall his call, but he's got his amateur extra. So he is bragging and holding, you know, not bragging. He's letting me and Chris know, you know, I got my amateur extra and this, that, and the other. So he's razzing us a little bit, but it's all in good fun. And really proud of him. I mean, he's really done good with it. But they're both very well, doing very good.
Larry, I'm just where I live here, I can't get into Jack Norris W4TWX's repeaters here in this hole I'm in, with all the power I can muster into this vertical. I can hear him sometimes, but I can't get into those repeaters. And I was just curious to know how they was managing here with the hobby since one of those questions you put up was from him about VHF and UHF. I wish some of them would get up here on 610 occasionally, because those repeaters of Jack is wind them out even with a fixed station. It's impossible. KI4LCI, go ahead, Larry. I don't want to leave you out.
Leave me out, Andy. KK4JBQ. I was just curious. Over here in the States, during the time you were speaking of there in your journal, we understood them to have names. And I'm sure that's not how you refer to it, but it's how people here would refer to a time, for instance, Desert Storm. Were you, is that about the time you were there, Chad?
And, I've got, they're written down in here somewhere, Larry. I can't remember, but it was, I think both of them was Iraqi Freedom. So you had Desert Storm, Desert Shield. That was in the 90s, I think. That's when Iraq went into Kuwait and started taking over Kuwait. 1990s, pretty sure-ish, that kind of time frame. Not sure about that, but I think, so I was senior in high school, so I had just joined at that time. I think it was in that time frame. So 2003, from 1990, 13 years later, I'm in Iraqi Freedom. And then, yes, when our administration decided, okay, it's over, we're pulling out of Iraq, it was Operation New Dawn. So Iraqi Freedom / Iraqi New Dawn. And so that's the names of the operation.
Then that puts it in a time frame. And I appreciate you filling me in on that. KK4JBQ.
Not to bore you, but this is 18th of March. So this was well into the deployment, toward the end. And I've got my R&R. I can leave and come home for 15 days. So instead of coming home, Anna flew herself and the three kids to Germany. And I left Iraq, from Iraq to Kuwait, Kuwait to Bahrain, and Bahrain into Germany. So this is 8, 9, 10, 12 months later, in toward the end of my deployment. Today is the 18th of March, and today was a very difficult day for all of us. We decided to take a road trip to Dachau today, and I cannot describe how I felt while I stood on the grounds where so many terrible things happened. The first place that you come to is the run. So let me stop right here. Larry, is this inappropriate?
It is inappropriate. I believe it's very appropriate to speak about a place, and especially the horrendous things that we know occurred there, is to honor the people who were sacrificed to a terrible chapter in our, well, in the history of human beings. I think everybody sees it that way. It's not inappropriate. I don't think you'll be saying anything inappropriate. KK4JBQ.
So, all right, well, I'll proceed. Nothing vulgar here. Just history, I guess. So, I cannot describe how I felt while I stood on the grounds where so many terrible things happened. The first place that you come to is the remains of the rail yard that was just outside of the front gate. Written on the gate were the words in German, "Work will set you free." As I entered the gates, I tried to imagine how a prisoner must have felt, not knowing, but at the same time knowing their fate while at the camp. As I walked through the massive iron gates, someone shut the gate behind me, and I do think I don't will ever forget that sound the latch made when it made contact. How many times that gate had opened and closed before, I looked back and suddenly the world was a very dangerous place in my mind. We proceeded to the massive courtyard, and it took me a few moments to take everything in. The wind was blowing from the west, and it was bitterly cold. One of the first things that I noticed was an artist's representation, something hanging sculpture that looked to be made of bones and barbed wire. Very grotesque in my mind, and I could not look at it for long, knowing what it represented. Anna and I moved into the main building, and it is now a museum, but back then it was the main processing station. It was arranged as a long series of hallways with long rectangular columns that were placed in a particular order in order to facilitate the efficiency of the whole process of receiving prisoners. So if this is offending anybody, let me stop now and ask KL4NUE. As we walked down each hallway, there were artifacts that were still there from the prisoners that had went through the camp. In one hallway, there was a handmade desk that was built by the prisoners to process other prisoners. The craftsmanship was excellent, and I could not imagine having to build something like that to help to destroy my fellow man. The Nazi war something by the end of the year had exterminated over 45,000 people at this location. At the opposite end of the compound was the crematorium, spelled with a K, where they would burn the bodies after they were killed. All walked into the building and decided each part of the rectangular building. It was very cold and damp and made my stomach twist in knots as I attended each room. Prisoners were told that they were going to take showers before they entered the building. And the first room was the disrobing room. Once they removed their clothes, they entered into the shower room, or what they thought was the shower. It was very unnerving standing in this room. The room itself was a small room with storage vents in the ceiling. Strange vents in the ceiling, made of copper. Copper shower heads that if you knew anything about plumbing, you would not know that something was not right. After gas were thrown down the vents, their bodies were moved into the next room that contained six furnaces that burned the remains. I could not imagine having to do such things as a person or a man. Behind the crematorium was a walkway that had an execution range with a blood trench for something. Looks like maybe rifles. Execution range with a blood trench for rifles. And execution range for pistols. And two graves that contain the ashes of over 2,000 bodies. I could not describe what was going through my mind after seeing these things. I was impressed that German law now demands that all German high school students must attend and tour a concentration camp in order to graduate from their high school education to teach the new generation what happens during this place, something, place war, something. After we rested for a while, I took the family out into town for a great dinner. So, I'm sure you don't want to hear about the dinner, but that was part of our R&R, and I just thought that was, you know, I thought maybe you'd like to hear that, Larry.